Okay. So did you feel in COVID, as everyone was trying to figure out what direction was this going, and they started talking about death rates of 50% or more, what was the medical community's belief in that? I mean, did you guys think that, like, that's a real thing, possibly? I mean, I can remember thinking that. I thought, man, if that's the truth, I'm not going outside.
Yeah, you know, I had just helped open the surgery center in Chico. And, you know, we live and die by regulation in healthcare. And the regulations, it was almost like a daily huddle, like what regulation changes are going to happen today. And getting different signals and, you know, different regs thrown at us, but we still have a job to do. And it seemed chaotic, you know, that you didn't know what the regs were going to be. And then you had people trying to weigh in on whether or not they wanted to come to work if vaccinations were mandatory and if they didn't want one. And the impact on the healthcare providers when we needed them the most created an environment that I can only describe as scary.
Okay, like unpack that further. Like, you don't have to use any names, but give me some examples of people that you worked with that either walked away or quit the profession or were really
sure.
Like, harassed into.
Sure. Well, you know, when you belong to a nurses union and you're looking for your reps to get, you know, leadership and guidance, like, is this okay? Can they do this to us? You know, and the union says, and this is exactly what the local union for nurses here in Shasta County said, that we're not going to take a stand on it. They basically sat on their hands. And
they sat on their hands. Now,
yeah.
In terms of standing up for
and taking a stand on it at all, like, they didn't say, you know, well, look, they can't do this or they can't do that. They can't regulate this or that. No, they said, you know, this is out of our hands. We're not touching it. And as you know, like everybody knows, California Nurses Association, the state of California, wields a lot of power.
Yeah.
And if they decided to say something one way or another, it would have had an impact, I think. And I think it would have had an impact on everything right down to the bedside.
Yeah.
Know?
So. Do you feel that, and so are those, so like coming out of it, you know, I guess coming out of it, maybe like the 8 months to a year that we've kind of have off, because now it looks like we're going back into that with the winter season approaching. I mean, are they talking about taking a different position or taking a position at all this time?
Well, it's still unclear. You're not getting a whole lot of, you know.
And I know you're speaking for yourself, not for other union members.
Sure. No, I am. This is Morgan. This is all me. So I'm not seeing a lot of leadership right now about what the regs might be moving forward. If there is, I haven't seen it online or coming out of the Capitol, Sacramento.
So talk to me a little bit about the senators, assemblymen, board.
I think, you know, when I went down after, I was kind of reluctant to go work in that environment, not knowing how I was going to respond to COVID. But after I had COVID, I felt compelled to go on a travel assignment, and I saw that they were offering real big incentives. I mean, crazy high money wages to go feed a huge problem. That was their solution, basically, is to throw money at these hospitals, and they'll know what to do with it. Well, I'm sorry, but corporate health care, you throw money at them, we know what they do with it.
Just tell the listeners what they do with it.
Well, I think it just builds a breeding ground for corruption, you know, and I think we're still feeling that at some level. You saw the rise of companies like Snap Nurse, and it's a brilliant company. But
what is Snap Nurse?
Snap Nurse is like an app for your phone.
Yeah.
So it's an app that will send you messages about travel assignments that come up, and they popped up during the COVID epidemic, and they're based out of Florida, and basically, they're shopping around for the highest paying contracts for nurses.
Got it. So basically, the money that went to the hospital, you believe, wasn't really put towards the use of patient care or preventative health. It was just basically a money grab for corporate.
Well, you know, who can say for sure?
You
don't really know what went on there, but I know what happened at the bedside was at a time when I thought maybe even the federal government should really have stepped in a little bit and maybe, you know, National Guard or something to help with the epidemic. We didn't see that, and we didn't see any real leadership coming out of the Board of Registered Nursing during that time. And
okay, so like Board of Registered Nurses, so you're talking about newly like nurses that come out of college and they're doing their boards or they're doing their, I don't know what you would call them, not an internship.
So the Board of Registered Nursing is a group of appointed individuals appointed by the governor's office, and they're in charge of keeping track of nurses and making sure that they're following the Nursing Practice Act. And a lot of them have been nurses for a very long time. They come from a wide range of experiences and backgrounds. And what we saw during COVID was that there were quite a few of those seats that were left vacant. And at a time when we needed leadership the most, I felt, coming out of that office, I felt like it had been gutted. In fact, I know it had because I tried contacting the office during COVID to let them know some of the issues that we were having at the South Stockton Hospital.
Okay, so let me ask you this. So newly trained nurses, when they're coming out of school and they're getting ready to be, you know, a full-fledged nurse or whatever that process would look like, how was the educational process hindered during COVID? So people that were wrapping up their degrees in 19 and 20.
Well, the regs affected nursing programs across the state, and we already had a nursing shortage going into COVID. And then coming out of it, the nurses that were trained during that time period, which, look, the nurses that came out during that time period didn't get a lot of hands-on clinical experience, and it hurt them, and it hurt all of us. So, you know, nurses during that time period that came out, these are the ones that are, you know, the workforce, basically. They came out with not a lot of hands-on clinical experience, and but we need them, so they're out there, and we're looking for further training on them. And you're not getting a whole lot of upfront training and investment into new nurses. Some of the corporate models are doing, you know, longer training programs once they get into the but not all. And don't ask me for numbers on that; I couldn't give you.
Sure. Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to take our first break. When we come back, I want to get into just corporate health care and where Shasta County is right now. I want to talk about the shortages in doctors, like my daughter, obviously, being pregnant. Her and her husband are expecting their first child in April, and she's had a really hard time getting into an OBGYN. Just actually had her first appointment, but it took a really long time, much different than when Sarah and I, you know, had our three kids. So we'll take a quick one-minute break, and we'll be right back.
And now, the Real Estate Minute, brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When it comes to buying and selling real estate, one size does not fit all. Higher-priced homes sell differently than medium-priced homes. Make sure your realtor knows the difference and has the right tools to get your home sold for the highest price. Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor how they plan to sell your home and what they'll do differently to make your listing stand out. Ask your realtor what kind of experience they have in marketing and sales outside the real estate industry. Be sure to choose a realtor with solid marketing and sales training who also understands tech and internet advertising. Interview at least three realtors and make sure to call the number one high-end home selling agent for the past 13 years, me.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
My people of this country and we're under attack. They ban and us, they cancel us for speaking the facts. If you man enough, come stand with us, take USA back. And every time we pull up, all you're gonna see is American flag.
All right, this is Kevin Cry. This is my show. We are back. 1460. KCNR 1460.com. Streaming 96.5 FM, 1460 AM. We're back here with Morgan. And we were going to start talking, Morgan, about, I'd like to know your thoughts about healthcare in Shasta County in terms of, you know, numbers of doctors. I know a lot of doctors have left. And we don't seem to get as many here anymore, and people will have different opinions as to why. I absolutely believe this is a great, great place to raise a family. And if you're going to pick California, this is one of like the best counties to live in. But what are we up against corporately? Drawing medical professionals to Redding or Shasta County.
For sure. And I would, you know, this is a good time to just say that the medical community here in Shasta County, the medical professionals, there's some really, really good ones. And we've also lost some really, really good ones. And the why that we've lost them, I think a lot of it is statewide. I think we just feel the impact here a little bit more. With the exodus from California, took a lot of professionals out of the state. And especially during COVID, the change in property values, the exodus from California, you saw a lot of medical professions as a whole. Historically, though, that was happening before COVID even.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons, I believe, was the change in the dynamic of the structure between doctors out in the community and patients, hospitals, and funding. And but we still have a real good, great, actually, base of medical professionals here in Shasta County. It's one of the few jobs that people in this area know that they can get when they get out of school is to go into healthcare. So there's a couple of great nursing programs here. We've got Shasta College, my alma mater. I'm a little bit biased. It's the same nursing program that my grandma went to.
Yeah. So tell me why, though, people. If it wasn't property values or getting out of California, what about California politics or corporate or legislation as it relates to the healthcare industry would drive a doctor out of Redding?
Well, what we saw, you know, if you roll the clock back 40 years, we had a county hospital that was, you know, had every kind of service that you can think of at that time. And I think about 1980, the county government here decided to sort of defund or stop putting money into the hospital, and instead, I think 1981 or two, they voted instead for building the Shasta County Jail, which is now starting to get old, as you know, and having issues. And so I think that the timing of all of this is, you know, the infrastructure of the hospitals. Let's start there. Mercy Hospital has you know, been added on again and again over the years. They have to jack up the bottom of it and pump concrete into it every year because it's trying to slide off the side of the hill. SRMC has been added on to hundreds of times, and there's not one set of blueprints to tell you where the pipe in that building goes because it's all over the place. And I think that they're outdated, and the people that own them, like I know for a fact, having worked in Shasta Regional, the nurses there complained all the time about the equipment being outdated. And they're coming up against this entity that doesn't really belong to the county. And that entity is corporate healthcare. And I was born at Mercy Hospital. My dad was born at Shasta General, which is, you know, now SRMC. But
what about the corporate structure with doctors would force medical professionals, not just doctors, but medical people to leave?
Let's roll the clock back a little bit and talk about where we were and where we are now, because I think that demonstrates it. And I think, you know, rolling the clock back 40 years, if you had a doctor in town that you went and saw and you got sick, you went to the hospital, and he would follow you into the hospital and take care of you there. Unless you needed a specialist of some kind, then they would refer you on to the hospital. And now that system has kind of been overrun by corporate interest. And so when you go to a hospital now, you're seen by a hospitalist physician, not your own personal one. And a lot of the community doctors that were out there, we lost some great physicians during this whole transition in healthcare. You know, the corporate push to put hospitalists in charge of their patients basically forwarded their agenda for patient care. And not necessarily your private physician, your hometown doc. And so when the government stepped in and kind of cut the funding for reimbursement for those private practice primary care physicians, you saw a lot of practices close up. Some of those physicians went to work as a hospitalist just so they could stay, here in Shasta County, a lot of them left. And I think that that kind of progressed over time to where if you weren't working for them, you weren't working. You know, and what has that left us with? That's left us with a huge, huge gap in access to healthcare and funding that could really be going back into the community.
Okay, so when you talk about, so you talk about different groups in corporate medicine. So like, like unions, like, you know, not just what do you make of them, but what's the like, what's going on with the HMOs, Kaiser, CNA Effect, and CNA Effect Reading? Like, how's that?
Well, you know, we're subject to these big corporate laws that go into, you know, on the healthcare side of it. And we're also beholden to what's going on within the California Nurses Association. Between those two things, we're kind of caught in the middle. And, you know, I can tell you from firsthand experience, having worked as a nurse in a department helping organize and then getting the nurses union started and then, you know, getting into it with an administration and getting terminated and immediately not getting support for the union that you just brought in is pretty infuriating, but it's an extension of policy that's already in effect. And so a small town like, you know, or small county like Shasta County, if you get into it with one of these big corporate healthcare entities and you try and find representation, if your union's not backing you up, and doing their due diligence to represent you, then you're left with whoever will take an employment law case here in Shasta County. And I can tell you, there's not very many employment law attorneys in Shasta County that are willing to go up corporate global entities like Littler Law.
Yeah.
You know.
So do you feel like for medical professionals wanting to come here, is it safe to say they can make a lot more money somewhere else? I'm trying to understand if this is a Shasta County thing, or because I do know, and I've spoken to a couple other supervisors from other counties, they say, you know, healthcare is really bad where they are as well, but they tend to be other than Fresno County, which is much bigger than, you know, Glen or Trinity, but you know, just wanting to understand is it just a California thing in general that a lot of people are just leaving and California isn't somewhere where they want to go, or, you know, just really how bad is it? Like, I'm trying to understand people that are going to, you know, I understand, like, when I had my hip surgery, I went down to UCSF because I knew Dr. Vail, who's the chief of staff down there. So, of course, I had him cut on me because he does, you know, 15 of those operations a month opposed to, you know, 5 a year.
Sure.
You know, on some of my, so I get that, but I really want to drill down and, like, what's your opinion on?
Well, it does have statewide impact for sure. And, you know, my dad had a health issue around the first of the year. I don't know if I told you this or not, but he ended up going down to Stanford for evaluation and treatment and staying on basically a world renowned heart and lung transplant unit while he was there. And, thank God he didn't need surgery and he's doing okay. But while I was there, I'm looking around this unit. Like, this is the top-notch facility in the world for
Stanford, yeah.
Yeah, Stanford. And the type of issue that my dad had was actually called the Stanford Type B, you know, fill in the blank. And because they're the ones that initially came up with that term.
Yeah.
So he was in the right place for sure. But looking around there and seeing that there were travel nurses working on that unit and the why behind that and the why there's a nursing shortage. You know, I just recently applied for a clinical instructor position in a neighboring county, and they have a new nursing program that's a one-year training program. And that at least is an attempt to try and shore up what's going on clinically in the state with lack of nurses, et cetera. This state brings in a lot of nurses from overseas, the majority of which come from the Philippines. Kind of sad for that nation because their whole healthcare system gets outsourced. You know, they try and train nurses, and as soon as they get their nursing degree, they can take their NCLEX in Manila and come in on a work visa, no questions asked. They're happy to have them. And I think, you know, there are good things and bad things about it. have nothing disparaging to say about Filipino culture. My, you know, you go to work in a hospital in California, a Kaiser in Vallejo, or whether it's San Joaquin County, you're going to find a lot of really good, they're great nurses. They really are. They've got a professional, caring nature to them. The Philippines are our allies. They've got great English-speaking skills. It's a perfect fit. But I think with that also comes a lot of infiltration in institutions like California Nurses Association. You know, the top leadership comes from there. They're also in the top leadership positions at Kaiser. And it's hard to, you know, I don't know that anyone can say special interest group since Schwarzenegger, but
sure.
They are a faction within the California Nurses Association. And I think here locally that brings up some interesting things for discussion amongst the local union members at both hospitals that belong to the California Nurses Association. And
so do people even here in Shasta County that have, you know, nursing degrees or who are working at Mercy or RNC or even St. Elizabeth's down in Red Bluff, do they often try and take travel jobs because they can be based here out of Reading, but they can make a lot more money traveling somewhere else? Does that happen pretty frequently or no?
Well, I think that nurses know that it's an option. I think there's a lot of, I call them boomers. You know, that's what they call it in the skilled trades. And people that travel around chasing the highest paying jobs.
Yeah.
And you can make a lot of money doing that. You live like a gypsy and never see your family, but you'll have gobs of money. And new immigrants in the country that probably have a huge family back in the Philippines, they're drawn into that. There's a lot of foreign travel nurses.
Give the listeners and myself, give me an idea of like what does a nurse make? Just ballpark, you know, Mercy. And I know Mercy pays tends to pay a lot higher than Shasta
sure.
Regional. But if you're, you know, at Mercy and you work your whatever yeah. 410s, but if you become a travel nurse, like what's the difference? Is it 20%? Is it 50%?
I'd have to calculate it out. I would say, off the top of my head, you could probably make double.
Double, really?
In some instances, triple. There's a strike going on if you're following the strikes in the Bay Area, San Francisco. The Kaiser Hospital is going on with CNA. The people that are walking that strike right now, they're making $8,000-$9,000 a week.
Wow.
That's more like three times what a Shasta County union employee makes at either Mercy or Shasta Regional.
Wow. Okay, so we're going to take another break. When we come back, we're going to talk. I want to talk a little bit about this bill that Dictator Newsom just vetoed about psychedelic drugs.
Oh, yeah, let's talk about that.
So we'll be right back in about a minute.
Number one high-end home selling agent for the past 13 years, me.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
What is happening in the state of Jefferson? To find out, listen to the Jefferson State of Mind program Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. on KCM.
But if it came along, everyone that knew him knew which side that he'd be on. He never was a hero for this county's shining light. But you could always find him standing up for what he thought was right. He'd say you've got to stand for something or you'll fall for anything.
Isn't that the truth? Stand for something or you'll fall for anything. And as it relates to health care, I can tell you this, and it sounds really, really trite or simple, but, you know, either make time for fitness or wellness or make time for sickness. And I'm not saying that's everybody's thing where I'm saying like it's like the Tom Cruise from Oprah thing where you just got to exercise and take some vitamins. But, you know, take your health seriously. I mean, I just turned 47. You know, our 30-year class reunion's next summer. And I'm going to be a grandpa in April. So it's like, man, all right, that's it. And now I kind of gave myself a freedom till I was 50. But again, you know, we've lost classmates that never even saw 45. So sure. People take your health seriously, get active. And anyway, okay, that's my soapbox. So we're going to go back to.
It's a good one.
It's a good soapbox. So Newsom just vetoed a bill, you know, unpack that for us. Whether it's on the political side a little bit,
sure.
But on the healthcare side, what this means.
Well,
and make sure you tell them the bill.
Well, Before we go down that road, can we just talk about mental health in general?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yep.
Just because I think, you know, there can kind of be a disconnect between the person working down in the trenches. Like, I'm talking to the ER nurse that's listening out there who has a mental health patient that comes in, maybe.
Often. Especially in the ER here in Shasta County.
Every ER.
Every ER.
You know, we have a system set up in mental health where it's really backed up and backlogged. I don't know if you know this, but if somebody's brought in to an ER on a 5150 that is a mental health hold, then the county has an obligation of getting a psychiatrist in there to see that patient within so many days or hours. I think there's different levels. You can do like a 23 or 24-hour hold or a 72-hour hold. And so even before COVID, the solution to that was to bring in a telehealth monitor and have a psychiatrist do an evaluation of somebody who's not being cooperative in an, you know, understaffed emergency room. That's what you get these days. You don't get enough staff in an emergency room. We've got some great emergency room nurses here in Shasta County, at both hospitals. We've got some great ER physicians at both hospitals. But they're not given enough resources, to be honest. And mental health is a huge part of that. Huge.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's very frustrating for these psychiatrists to get through all of these holds in a timely fashion because there's so many of them. And we see them out in the community. It's easy to feel confrontational with them. But these are people that need help.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not getting it, and so they become sort of people who, you know, use resources where they can, but oftentimes they're just going through a revolving door and not getting the real help that they need. So they call it the mental health crisis.
Yep.
You know.
So how does that relate? I mean, so how did Newsom just make this worse?
Oh, Gavin. you know, I think I spend, because I'm a small healthcare startup business owner, just over a year ago.
Yeah, we'll get into that at the end. I want to know about this bill. Like, so go ahead. I'm going to push you on this.
All right. No, fine. Let's go down this road. Newsom vetoed a bill. This is in the B section of the Enterprise Record, which is the Chico version. That's where I'm based out of, is Chico, California. And Newsom just vetoed a bill that would have decriminalized possession and personal use of psychedelic mushrooms.
Okay.
Why would he do that? You know, I don't know. I don't know what that means to you when you see that headline there.
No, I saw it. That's the.
What does that say to you?
Well, one, what I realize is everything's driven by money. So.
Sure.
But why would he continue to legalize things that are obviously detrimental to...
Well, to be honest, I haven't read the article yet, but I just saw it on the way in here this morning. And but when I read the article headline, it basically says to me, Newsom vetoes bill that supports science.
Yes.
And I spend most of my week... It's really frustrating for someone in my position because I spend probably 90% of my week doing patient education on the appropriateness and use of medications that have psychedelic properties, and I've been waiting patiently for psychedelic mushrooms to become decriminalized because I have patients that use them. And
and explain to the listener how they're used, but then also how they're abused.
Sure. Like, I don't know. They've been decriminalized in certain municipalities for a long time now. San Francisco, Oakland, and Santa Cruz, and I believe most recently San Diego, are all municipalities that have gone two thumbs up to the decriminalization of psilocybin mushrooms specifically for microdosing. So they've shown up at farmers markets, and you can go to the farmers market in Oakland and buy yourself a container of psilocybin mushrooms if you're looking for them. That's where to get them, or Santa Cruz. And so, you know, they're out there already. The municipalities, these are big municipalities, Oakland,
yeah.
You know. They, well, I mean,
I know you can't assume what somebody's thinking.
No,
they're not buying them for soup.
I find just the opposite to be true.
Okay.
The people that want mushrooms for recreational purposes, there's plenty of places that sell them, you know, on the streets. You can grow them yourself if that's what you wanted to do. There's a real low abuse potential associated with psychedelic mushrooms. It's not like somebody goes, oh, God, I gotta have some more mushrooms. There's just no physical sort of addictive properties to them.
So why would Newsom then not decriminalize this?
You know, I'd have to look at the specific tags that were put on that bill that maybe he didn't agree with. But, you know, we're already doing psychedelic mushroom research in California. There's a psychiatry program, I think at UCSF, that's doing psilocybin research for depression. That's how people are using them. That's why people want access to them. So this is just another roadblock in the access to healthcare.
Okay.
And it's pretty infuriating for those of us that are following the science behind it and are really excited about the science behind psychedelics.
Okay, so for this argument's sake, then, so what? Why would our government make it harder to treat mental health patients? I mean, can you even articulate that? Like what are you seeing that makes it? I mean, because our health care, the care is getting worse, not because of the people. Like
sure.
You said, there's a lot of hardworking people,
sure.
But it's. I have a hard time believing some of this is underfunded in the sense that I see how many billions.
There's funding on the table right now for psychedelic research. You know, he just cut off a bunch of that for patients that want access to it. And maybe this has a, you know, this says decriminalize possession, personal use of psychedelic mushrooms, but there could be a little caveat in there for medical healthcare profession, you know, the administration of it by a psychiatrist. That's what we saw with 215 in the marijuana laws when they first came into play, was that the safe and compassionate use. Was that, you know, when it first came into fruition, you could only get it through a physician order, and there were very few physicians. There were a few that, you know, the other ones kind of labeled as, you know, outcasts or whatever. And we saw it blow up, and then the regulation that we now have in place in the state of California for legal cultivation and possession and consumption of marijuana. But psychedelics, I'm real hesitant to put in the same box, so to speak, as marijuana, because I don't want to see the clinical side of this be cast aside and thrown into the same box of what you're talking about, the people that are afraid of psychedelic mushrooms. There's a lot of, you know, mycophobia, if you want to call
sure.
it that.
Yeah, and again, like for me, like who has like no, I have zero firsthand experience of narcotics or drugs. So it's just like, to me, it's all, you know, even just learning just a little bit. You know,
I think if people knew who were taking psychedelics or microdosing on psilocybin in their community, I think that they would be surprised. But this kills the dialogue right here. This article kills the dialogue on appropriate use of psychedelic mushrooms. And it has a... already has a stigma attached to it because of the history of the use of it through the 60s, Nixon, you know, the war on drugs, et cetera, et cetera. We've demonized something that has real medical value, and you have to ask yourself where that's coming from.
Well, it's kind of like with them trying to ban ivermectin and things of that nature. And I saw what they did to Rogan, and I've seen what they do to like low barrier access to drugs that can help people that corporate pharma can't.
Sure. I'm dealing with that right now in my business.
Well, let's do this. Let's take our last break, and we'll come back, talk about the your new venture.
Sure.
And also I want to tie this into like what, as a supervisor, you know, what, not so much just what can I do, but like if you had one big ask of county or state government to really lean in and help the mental health crisis we have,
sure.
Especially here in Shasta County, I'd like to hear your thoughts on that. So
thank
with
you.
That, we'll be right back.
All right, thanks.
Real Estate Minute brought to you by Vista Real Estate.
When it comes to buying and selling real estate, one size does not fit all. Higher-priced homes sell differently than medium-priced homes. Make sure your realtor knows the difference and has the right tools to get your home sold for the highest price. Hi, I'm Chad Phillips with Vista Real Estate. When you're ready to sell, make sure you ask your realtor how they plan to sell your home and what they'll do differently to make your listing stand out. Ask your realtor what kind of experience they have in marketing and sales outside the real estate industry. Be sure to choose a realtor with solid marketing and sales training who also understands tech and internet advertising. Interview at least 3 realtors and make sure to call the number one high-end home selling agent for the past 13 years, me.
The Real Estate Minute is brought to you by Vista Real Estate. Call 530-247-0700 or visit VistaReading.com today.
All right, we are back. October 8th, Sunday, here with Morgan in studio, 1460, KCNR1460.com, where it's streaming, 96.5 FM. Okay, so we talked about, Morgan, you have a new venture in the medical field. Sounds like it stemmed from just being really frustrated with patient care and knowing that there's better ways to treat people.
Well, it was also my frustration with what I consider to be a broken healthcare system. You know, wanting to do something different and wanting to kind of be my own boss if I could. And luckily I found a physician that was very supportive in more ways than one, and who has a pain management practice that encompasses a lot of areas. You know, he goes all the way from Lincoln, Roseville up to Mount Shasta and allowed me to use his office to kind of start up my own business within his and then break off as its own separate entity, and that continues to grow. And I get a lot of support from him. I couldn't have done it without him. My hat's off to him. And just to watch what's happened in the time, you know, just over a year now since we opened the doors, starting off with just, you know, like a CIA operative in Fallujah before the war starts, with nothing but a laptop and a phone and and going to work. And
so briefly, what is your business?
Right.
And then what does it do for the patients you're serving? And how is this the best model going forward, do you think?
Well, I think that it opens the door for the conversation in mental health. And, you know, there's a huge stigma around talking about mental health. You know, naturally people don't want to talk about their own mental health issues except with a provider. And so opening NorCal Ketamine Infusions kind of allows people to have access to opening that dialogue, and breaking down barriers to healthcare and mental health is huge. And I think that just by, you know, the first month I was in business, I think that we saw 3 patients total. And, you know, you're trying to support a family, et cetera,
sure,
all those kinds of things, and you're not having a whole lot of income. It can be really frustrating, but toeing the line, I had saved up some money and I had some support, and just do things the old-fashioned way. You know, one of the things that I learned from a mentor here in Shasta County who retired, Dr. Bobo, was a radiation oncologist I worked for. I watched how he kind of formulated his practice and put the time in and provided great service to people and stuck to the clinical practice guidelines that were coming out. And, you know, clinical practice guidelines evolve all the time. Medicine is constantly evolving. We're seeing some really good things come out. And there's in all fields related.
Okay, so really quick, I want to go back to this. So you saw 3 patients your first month, location.
Right.
Now you have 3 locations, correct?
3 locations.
There's one here in Redding?
We do infusions in Redding, Chico, which is our main office, and Lincoln, California.
Lincoln. And those infusions, what are they doing, and how is that really, and how is that improving mental health?
Right. So what is ketamine? Ketamine is an anesthetic. Originally derived from a psychedelic itself, and started off as a field anesthetic during the Vietnam War, which my dad served.
Yeah, I know your dad served.
Yeah, and You know, but he didn't remember using it much over there, but that's kind of where it first got notoriety. And then and it's still used as an adjunct in anesthesia for induction of anesthesia today if you go and have a surgery. That's one of the few drugs that they'll give you. They'll give it to you for procedural sedation in the ER. So there's been a lot of people out there that had ketamine and they didn't even know it.
Yeah.
But when they were looking at that, they noticed that people's symptoms of depression and suicidal thoughts after their surgery were alleviated. So that started some investigation into ketamine. Ketamine being around that long was a generic drug. You know, Big Pharma, my friend and yours,
yeah.
Big Pharma doesn't make any money off of generic drugs, right? So immediately after I opened the business, I mean, the same day I opened the business, basically I saw roadblocks being put in for access to it. And some of that, I think, was spurred by Big Pharma taking ketamine and all the research behind it, changing it slightly by making it an amine, putting a brand label on it, and marketing it as a nasal spray. And by doing that, they've kind of created a loophole for themselves where my very first patient – I got to tell you about my very first patient, Kevin. He came to me. He had he had been a combat vet over in Iraq, and then I'm not 100% sure, but I think a military contractor of sorts, and he had very severe PTSD. People with PTSD, they have a hard time maintaining a regular sleep cycle. They go into this flight or fight, and they never really get a good deep sleep. There's all kinds of ways that they go around to try and combat that with light therapy, medications, etc. Most people don't like the medications available. They want to try something else. They develop other problems like substance use disorders, those kinds of things. But this person came to us and said, "Hey, I've got PTSD. I'm not taking anything, but I'm not sleeping." We gave him one treatment. He went home that night, slept like a baby, and has every night since. And I still check in with him once in a while because I can't believe that one treatment would make such a huge impact on one person, but it did. And after that, I was sold. Like, this really makes a huge impact. And we can get into this neuroplasticity component of ketamine where you're, you know, getting this sort of reset and allowing yourself this and, you know, going into the treatment with this intention of making some positive changes
okay.
for yourself.
So let me ask you. I've done a little bit of work
in the
homeless, addicted, mental health area the last
sure.
year and a half. So people that are on the streets, there's a lot of people that deal with a lot of trauma. So how accessible are these types of treatments just to your average citizen walking around? Is this something they can go in? And not at your practice, but I'm saying at like a, is this something that's brought up by...
It's currently not covered under most insurances, you know, or Medicare.
Medicare, Medi-Cal.
They're not covered, so that means people have to pay cash. And to be quite honest, without the support of my doc financially, I think we would have gone up, you know, a long time ago just on the cash pay. But we wanted to do it. We wanted to do it anyway. We did a lot of pro bono treatments just to help people who couldn't pay. I think that we were also noticing, like, when we put our treatment protocols together, and they've been evolving since we opened. We're looking at the data and how to administer it so that people get the best results.
Yeah.
And it wasn't an IM injection and it wasn't nasal spray. It was an infusion, which is a little bit more expensive. We wanted to make it affordable. We tried to hit a target price point. We probably undershot it, but we also felt that there was a lot of people that were going away from clinical guidelines and best practice and focusing more on what I call ketamine sales. That is,
yeah.
you know, these huge programs that are super expensive and like only they're like really, really affluent could afford them. And that's just not what we wanted to do. We wanted to help use ketamine to make access for people with these issues for everybody. And I think that the roadblocks that I've seen pop up coming from the supply chain and Big Pharma are just gross. I think it's deplorable.
Yeah. Okay. So at a county level here,
sure.
What would be a step I would take? Like, would I go talk to, like, you know, Dr. Patton, who runs the Hope Van, the physician here at the
sure.
county that helps the individuals on the street. I mean, what's that conversation look like?
Well, I think it's a little bit more involved than that. I kind of
sure.
I'm
trying to squeeze it into like 2 minutes. So okay. So yeah. Well, I mean.
Well, I think that just opening a dialogue is the first step about how you want to go about it. There's also, you know, I have a competitor here. I don't look at him as a competitor. Who has a ketamine practice and fusion practice. I think support him, support us. Mental health services in general, like, you know, instead of incarcerating these people.
Yeah. And that's just it. I want to get help to the people that need it, and especially
sure.
the ones that can't afford it.
I'm seeing
so much money just poured in to areas that aren't reaching the people that it's intended to. And it's frustrating because it just feels like
there's a lot of, like I said earlier, there's a lot of great healthcare providers. You need to find ways to support them, and you're not going to find it through the corporate entities that are here. They've already shown their hand on that. The nurses, I've got a message for the nurses in this community that are unhappy with their union representation, and then they're not able to go up against the big dogs on their own. You guys can step away from that union and form your own charter if you want, and have one based here in the county. And if it goes well, and it does, like it could take off. It could have statewide, countrywide impacts if you're able.
Oh yeah, people need to understand that the only way you're going to get what you want is to really lead the charge yourself. If nobody is, let me ask you this: what's a website? And again, this is Morgan Pace. If you didn't hear his name earlier, it's Morgan Pace. And what's a website they could look you up?
NorCalInfusions.com.
NorCalInfusions.com, and that's infusions with
We're based in Chico. NorCal Ketamine Infusions is the name of the business. And
NorCal Ketamine.
Give us a call if you need help with depression, PTSD, substance use disorders, those kinds of things. If you just want to talk to somebody, we're bringing a psychiatrist on soon. We're bringing somebody that's really geared into the social work environment in Butte County. I'd like to work with some Shasta County social workers as well and get after it, take it head on.
Yeah, I definitely want to get more information just from a county perspective. So when this is over, we'll follow up because I want to be able to take this to the people that can say, hey, this is why.
Absolutely.
This is a way it could work, or this is the avenue or path we could take. Is there anything else that we didn't hit on? I mean, I know we've got pages and pages of notes, so we tried to fit it into...
Right.
You know, I would like to
leave with a message of hope is that to the medical care community out here, the medical health professionals already here invested, that you're not alone in wanting to make things better and that, you know, let's work together to knock down the barriers to care. And, you know, let's not demonize the homeless. Let's help them. And let's show the next generation coming up that we can eliminate negative behaviors like cell phone use.
Yeah.
By, you know, screen time, all those things. I'm a hypocrite, by the way.
I get it. So this is bringing us to the end. Morgan, it has been an absolute honor and a privilege to have you in here.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
And we will definitely be following up with some of this. Again, thank you, Shasta.